The Effin' Rad Snowboard Podcast is presented by Vans. Season 8 of Effin' Rad is sponsored by Wired Snowboards, Anon Optics, The Boardroom Snowboard Shop, findanepicagent.com, and Tribute Board Shop in Nelson, B.C. Tribute Board Shop just hosted Turning Man at Salmo Ski Hill again a couple of weeks back, and the event looked amazing. Congratulations to all the racers who got one of the 110 coveted spots to compete. Tribute carries a curated collection of the best snowboarding gear available, and their shop staff are knowledgeable, friendly, and ready to help you start getting geared up. Visit Tribute Board Shop when you're in Nelson, B.C., subscribe to the Tribute Lounge on YouTube, and shop online at tributeshop.ca. Support also comes from Dakine, Grouse Mountain, Mount Seymour, Pro Standard GoPro Accessories, and Volcom Outerwear. I'm going to say it again, please subscribe to our YouTube channel. If you'd like to win a free Beneath Apparel first layer top and bottom, pause the show, go to the Effin' Rad YouTube channel, and comment, "I want new Beneath Apparel," in the comments of this episode. Or tag three friends in the Instagram post along with Beneath Apparel. I'll pick a new winner every week. I switched to Beneath underwear and first layer this year. It's amazing. Trust me, you want some. Special thanks this episode to Yes Snowboards, Tomahawk Indigenous Products, and be sure to check out Kaya J and the Drink Tickets' new album, Better. David Carrier Porcheron, or DCP, is a Canadian snowboarding legend known for his smooth backcountry style and his infectious positive energy. After 14 years on Burton, DCP started Yes Snowboards with Roman DeMarchi, JP Solberg, and Tadashi Fuse. And it's now been 14 years with Yes. Even after breaking his neck last year in a snowboarding accident, DCP's still out ripping. He's managing the Yes team, and he's a father of two and the husband of Megan Pischke Porcheron. I'm really stoked to bring you this interview with DCP, recorded earlier this year in his backyard up in Squamish.
I mean, now they're like groomed. There's a lot of groomed trails, but back then was like, okay, you showed up, you know, at Brandywine. Mm-hmm. You already went through this whole mission getting there, and then
yeah.
You get to that place, S shoot, and then it's like, oh, I have to get up there? Everyone's like, yep, let's go. And they know they've done it. You're like, oh, fuck.
Yeah.
You're like, ah.
It doesn't look possible. Yeah. Yeah. And you're seeing people eat it, too, and you're going, oh, my God, I just don't want to be that guy that's tumbling
or
down.
Or just like, stuffing it all the way up. Like,
yeah, yeah. Yeah. Oh, shit. When did they start grooming? Because they groom all the way to Chocolate Bowl now.
Yeah. That was like 4 years ago, something like that.
Okay. Yeah. Maybe. So the number of people that are out there now.
I bet it's just a lot.
It's so many.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like the big, big parking lot's full, 250 trucks or whatever. And it's still better than going to a resort, obviously.
Yeah. And I mean, if you're willing to explore, you bring some gas and like.
Mm-hmm.
You can still get the runs by yourself.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I was watching the movie you made in 2020. What was it called? The Way or something like that?
It was from Brian Arkenstein made it.
Yeah.
What was the name of it now? I don't remember.
It's pretty wonderful. It opens like you have a reunion with your buddies back home at the home resort.
Yeah, exactly.
The snow looked so good. I was like, oh, shit, I forget.
Back home?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it was good.
I forget there's really good snow in the east.
And like ever since my friends have, because a lot of them came to live here for some time, and then they wanted to go back and so they can afford, you know, getting a place, having a family, all that, and they had opportunities to work there. And so they pretty much work with the resort. At first they didn't, they just did it in the fall on their own with chainsaws and opening up lines between runs.
Wow.
And natural selection style building features and pillows and everything. And now like they've worked with the resort because they saw what they did, so they get hired every fall to do it,
to cut the brush,
to cut it back, to create these features. So now it's just like It's such a good playground.
That was the thing that while I'm watching you ride with your friends, I'm going, he's probably been hitting that hit since he was
some
12 years old.
Yeah, for sure. Some right? of them.
And seeing Dion and Devin at Seymour, the hits that they have that are just kind of unconventional and off to the side and people it don't, you know, wear a big highway into them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, because the obvious hits are there. People are hitting the yeah. obvious hits. The kids are hitting them. They're getting ruined.
Yeah.
And then these guys have their little sneaky hits with like a landing way over there that yeah. once you see them hit them, you're like, oh, you would have to practice on
local
that a lot
knowledge.
To get that one. Yeah. So yeah. it was fun. That's what I saw in that movie with you. Basically yeah. back home, you know, the guy who went and made it and did the thing, you know, that everybody wanted to do. Mm-hmm. But there's a big group of you that yep. came out. So there was a group from Quebec before you.
Yeah.
And then your group, who were the guys that you came out with?
Well, from that resort, I grew up with, they were all a little bit older than me.
Mm-hmm.
So David Aubrey.
Yep.
Rode for Ride for some time.
Yep.
And then Sylvain Rowe.
Mm-hmm.
He was part of Formula 8 crew, and we competed World Cup together in pipe, and Etienne Tremblay as well.
Yeah.
So and his big brother, Fabrice, and then there was these twins, Ollie and Charles Malte. And Ollie lived in Whistler forever. That's who I moved into in 96 when I first came here. He managed the A&W at first, and then he was the manager at the West Beach store. So he Sick. Spent like at least 10 years here.
Rad.
Yeah.
And he moved back to get a house kind of thing?
Yeah, like those guys. And Simon, the same thing for Simon, who was like a filmer for MacDoug that I lived with here for a while. He was a friend from back home. And
Rad.
Their parents owned sports store.
Mm-hmm.
So at some point, they were offered to go and take care of that. They were yep. doing that here, so like, oh yeah, I would go do that. So now they're like, they each have a very successful, like, one is like all sports, atmosphere, it's called. It's like a sport expert.
Sports atmosphere, I know that.
So they sell everything, and the other guys, they own S3.
Rad.
So like a couple different ones, like in two different towns nearby, and it's just, they're just living the life, having kids, and just...
Do you have any insight into what makes riders from Quebec so insanely good? Because I can remember hearing the French on the glacier, you know, in the summer, or even just going to Whistler, riding Whistler Park. You could hear the group of French guys was not stopping and hitting the big crowds. They were just going, you know, pardon me, you know, coming around, you know, and just... rolling the park,
right.
And it's been that for a really long time, like 20 years.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I don't know. I think we all grew up like riding ice, and mm-hmm. I mean, there's a lot of good snow, but it's also very cold and icy most of the time.
Yeah.
So I feel like we're just hungry for it, you know. Like edge control too got better from ice riding, and then our background in pipe riding.
Yeah.
And I guess when we all get to Whistler, it's just softer, and as just everything is better, so we're like, whoa.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
how I felt anyways when I came here.
There's a confidence to it. Like there's a confidence to maybe to the crew, you know what I mean? You guys yeah. are riding
and
fast.
As a crew too, like yeah. we're like tight, you know. So
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And now there's a lot of French Canadian living in Whistler over the last 15 years, but like when we first got here, when I first got here, there was JF Belchat, Martin, Emmanuel Krebs, and only a you know, 20 French Canadian, maybe, you know?
Yeah, sure.
And then that grew, you know? But
yeah, totally.
So as soon as you like, you hear French, like, oh, where are you from? Where in Quebec are you from? All right, we're friends. Let's go.
Yeah. So you get a bit of you're in.
Yeah.
You might not have to be the best rider yeah. ever, but then of course you're going to be riding with people that are riding so fast.
Yeah. And our crew, you know, we used to like compete and the regional circuit in Quebec, riding pipe, digging the pipe before we
yeah.
get to hit it and all these things. So I think like that community started to get even tight like that. Then we all just dreamed of competing at the West Beach Classic. So then we that's kind of how it kind of started with coming here to compete. And then, oh, we should just stay here.
Yeah.
We should totally. Actually come here during the winter. Imagine eating the wind lip, not in slush, but in powder, you know?
Yeah,
Dutch totally. Gap. Oh, I won't hit that.
That's so sick.
Yeah. That was fun.
I love that. Yeah. Yeah. I don't think, like, younger listeners would have no idea what it means to put your shovel on a feature. Like, it's fun going to the Holy Bowly, because a big part right. of Holy Bowly is that you need to have a rake or a mm-hmm. shovel, and you're going to help out at the end of the day.
Yeah, exactly.
That's how you build
it's
the community.
Like back to the roots.
It's so great. Yeah, yeah. It's really fun. But like, you wouldn't be allowed to touch a feature in a park today as a kid. Like, if you wanted to put a little extra whoop right. on something,
yeah, they won't.
The park crew would come and yeah. kick you off the mountain, I would imagine.
Yeah, I guess.
You have to go in the back. You see those kids still doing the same thing we did when we were kids. Build a backflip jump to like a big flat powder field. You know what I mean? Yeah. But that was our whole era. You would touch up like a professionally done pipe, right? Like, you would go somewhere and just fix the lip on a thing.
Yeah. Well, back then, yeah, that was pre-Pipe Dragon.
Yeah.
So they would build it with backhoe and mm-hmm. and then hand shovel and...
Who was top of the game when you were competing half pipe?
When I started, or like throughout? Because I competed for at least 7 to 8 years.
Yeah, so at the beginning, would it be Terrier era?
Yeah, Terrier was probably world champion then.
Yeah.
It was like, I remember like, oh yeah, Terrier, and there was like even like Reto Lam and like nice. Those guys, Daniel yeah, Frank.
Yeah. Camille Brichet. Yeah.
You know, that like era. That crew, and I was very looking up to them. And
yeah,
Mickey Albin was riding pipe.
Sick.
And, yeah. Yeah, Terry was definitely like leading the charge for sure.
Did you become homies with him when you were on the Burton team? Because there was a bit of a divide there, right? Like, heritage guys like Terrier, and then you guys were the seven team, like the young,
yeah,
cool.
Yeah, exactly.
Up-and-comer
yeah.
kids.
Yeah, it worked out like that. We were, because I was on Burton and he was on Burton, and, you know, so we got the chance to, like, travel together.
Yeah. Did you ever tell him that you went to get an autograph from him and he yeah. told you to go blow bubbles?
Yeah. But that was Jeff Brushy. Yeah.
Oh, that was Brushy with the bubbles.
Yeah. But yeah. Terrier was like, I'm not Terrier, I'm his twin brother.
Oh my God. That's
that was
even
in 94
better.
World Cup.
Yeah. That's incredible. Yeah. That's so nuts. And you get to tell him. You're like, dude, you told me you weren't you.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So, like, we became friends and we had some very good times in the mountain, New Zealand and in Europe. And, when I was competing pipe, he was doing still a little bit of competing, but yeah. he was kind of like almost like fading out of that.
He had an injury towards the end of it that was pretty yeah. gnarly, I think. Hey, he was rehabbing for like years.
Yeah, maybe the last contest I had with him competing against him was at the Nissan X-Trail in Japan.
Yeah.
And he actually won the quarter pipe event, and I got third at the Big Air 2 quarter pipe.
Nice.
So I beat him in that one.
Sick. That's awesome. Yeah, one of the things I talk about on the show a lot is that Terrier never beat Craig. Not ever.
No?
Craig retired just that year.
Really?
Where he had beaten Terrier, and he's like, hey, I'm not competing anymore. I'm going a free ride. And yeah, you can compete if you want, you know, but I prefer doing something a little more cooler.
Yeah, that's cool.
That's so awesome, man. Yeah, so you did compete and beat Terrier in an event as your young competitive self. That's sick.
Yeah, well, I guess, yeah, that was like Big Air 2 quarter pipe.
Yeah, dope.
And then he had invited me to Arctic Challenge.
Yeah,
so that must have been in maybe year 2000.
What was
like
up with that event? I don't know enough about it, because I by that time I'm so deep into just like snowboard culture blew up so big that you couldn't watch the videos anymore. Every video, you
right.
couldn't know what was going on with every event.
Yeah, the Arctic Challenge was held in Norway. Originally, it was at Lofoten, which is a northern island of Norway.
Sick.
And it was like a big pipe, big pipe event at first. And then when I was invited, it was year two, I believe, and it was in Oslo.
Yep.
So they had the a quarter pipe in Oslo.
Yeah, it was a street event.
Well, it was like at the stadium, the Olympic stadium where they had jump.
Is that the one where you come in from out the roof?
We were coming from the landing of the long jump a sick quarter pipe. And then from there, we went to Amsterdam, which is a mountain like a little bit outside of Oslo. And they had a big pipe there. That's mostly for what I was going there for.
What was the feeling of the Arctic Challenge? Was it like kind of anti-Olympics, like cool?
It was definitely not a FIS event.
Yeah.
And it was, I think, at the same time as when they started Ticket to Ride, TTR events.
Yep.
So it was probably one of the first TTR events.
Sick.
With Drew Stevenson and Terrier. And he had a group of people that helped him put that together.
Yeah. So being invited to that event was like, epic.
Yeah, it was the equivalent to be invited to Natural Selection, you know, at that time. Because it was like, ooh, you got the invite, ooh, you know, like it was invitational only, you know.
And at that point in your competition career, are you, because I imagine there's times when you're coming up, you're like excited to go to events, and then you're like just dying to go to the big events. And then I don't care so much about the events. This during the like really hungry DCP competitive years or?
Yeah, it was in the midst of it. But I also had started filming.
Yeah.
So I was filming for Treetop that year.
Sick.
And so actually I went to Norway. And then right after Norway, I had a trip to Iceland with Treetop, and Kyle was the filmer.
Rad.
And that was epic. Megan was on that trip. There was two guys from Austria with us, and this photographer, Dan Hudson.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a good stretch. Like, first time in Norway going there, and then back to Iceland to film, and I was like definitely living the dream that I've wanted. I was manifesting my, you know.
We need to talk about that, right? Like, I really, really appreciated that you did, how many days of gratitude? 107?
It's 108. And I skipped quite a few days, but as far as posting.
Yes.
At some point I was like motivated to do it every day.
Yeah.
But then it came to the point where I actually was living in gratitude and practicing it anyways.
Sick.
And I came to a realization, it's like, I don't need to share with everyone that I'm actually grateful for this and that.
Right.
But then I wanted to complete, and I'm still completing. I'm at 106 now.
106.
So there's two more.
So what, like 2 days until 108 days is done? Or is it
to complete this project that I started.
Yeah.
And I started this project when I got injured. I kind of like counted a little bit, like, okay, well, I figured maybe in about 3 months and a half, I want to be back at doing everything I do. And I knew that gratitude will get me there.
It was an intention. You set the intention.
I set an intention. And why 108 is because 108 is, you know, in yoga, you know, in spiritual world, it's like 108 chakras that you have.
Yeah.
You know, mostly it's like people know of seven of them.
Yeah, I was going to say.
And then there's like a few above your crown chakra, but then throughout there's truly 108.
Rad.
And that also, there's a lot of other meaning, like on the mala, in that religion there, or in that practice, there's 108 beads that you pray to or you sing a mantra to.
Mm-hmm.
And so, that's when the number came from. And it actually has been nice to just like get back into memory lane, you know?
Yes.
And just also in the present moment of what I'm feeling at the moment. And, you know, there was days that was harder. And so, you know, either I was expressing it through those posts or I was just living it. either way, I was in gratitude, and that truly is like, it got me through the healing.
Rad.
And yeah, I mean, it went faster than I anticipated, truly, like as far as like being able to get back to what I was doing, wanted to do.
Well, I'm reading Don Schwartz's book, which opens on the heli crash in 1990. And I thought I was getting the audio book because I listened to headphones all day, every day. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I'll bang this off in one shift at my work, right? And then I realized I'd bought a video book, like a digital book. And so I'm like, okay, well, I'll print it out on paper because I can't read a screen, 241 pages. It'll kill me. And then, you know, so the iBooks doesn't allow you to print it out. I don't know. They just want you to be on your computer, obviously. And I was like, geez, what am I going to do? Like, I want to interview the guy. I want to read the book. I sent him a message like, hey, you want to, I bought the book. If you want to send me a paper copy, I'll give it back to you at the end or whatever. So I started reading the book on my computer screen against my eyes, like my eyes were squinting, you know, like against mm-hmm. myself.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was so engaging that I got 25 pages in before I realized, oh my God, my eyes, I'm going to die. But it's, he talks about the doctors, when he got to the burn unit, were like, your nose, your ear, they're toast. They're gone. We're going to build you a new one out of plastic. Mm. And he had read somewhere about, who's the surfer? His last name's Fu. Mark Fu. Mark Fu had done a miraculous healing by like focusing on healing in his body. Uh-huh. And Don said to the, he was only 20 years old. So he said to the doctors, like, I'm just going to think my way into keeping my nose and ear. And they would come in every day and say, you know, sorry, buddy, but it's not going to work. And it fucking worked. That's what I kept reading. I was like, there is no way.
That's amazing.
This is going to work.
I didn't know,
and it worked.
Story, but yes, yeah. Absolutely. Like the power of thoughts, the power of positive thoughts, and the power of visualization.
Yes.
And belief is so strong. We're such powerful beings that it's like we can all do that.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of having the right mindset, or like getting into that mindset or that practice of doing it. Like, you know, like who I've been really looking up to this last few months through my recovery was Dr. Joe Dispenza.
I've heard the name, but I don't know.
Dr. Joe Dispenza has a lot of stuff on YouTube. He's got books called, one is called You Are the Placebo. The other one is Becoming Supernatural. And it's kind of like, well, what his experience is that he broke his back. And I believe it was 5 or 7 vertebrae that were broken.
Oh, my God.
And they told him that he needed to have surgery, put a rod, and he was probably never going to walk again.
Right.
And la, la, la. And so he already was on something, and he already knew that the power of thoughts for healing is very powerful. So he told to himself that when he was going to walk out of there without surgery, he opted out for surgery,
wow,
that he was going to then share his wisdom and his knowledge to the world. And that's what he's doing. So what he's done is essentially in meditation and into that space of visualization, he visualized his spine being completely built, rebuilt. Like,
yeah,
he was picturing each vertebra to be perfectly realigned and perfectly healthy. And he was doing that as a practice for 3 to 5, 6 hours a day.
Yeah. Yeah.
But he did that for a few months, and he walked out of there, and then he had a new x-ray, and everything was healed up.
That's insane.
Right? So like,
it's incredible.
Right away, like, my wife turned me on to him, and there was also a couple other people who referred me to just listening to his guided meditation. And then I was like, well, I'm going to do that. So then I started doing that, because there was the first like 3 weeks, there was not much I could do but lay, you
right
know?
Yeah.
And so I was practicing breathing and practicing Dr. Joe Dispenza's practices, and and visualizing my healing and coming back, you know, and that really helped.
Yeah.
And also I was like, also one thing that also works really good for me, and that he was doing, it was listening to certain frequencies, like in headphones.
Yeah, I've done this year. HemiSync. So like, HemiSync was this is from the 70s. And you can hear, so in HemiSync, you play one tone in this ear and a little off in this ear.
Right.
And then, I've you know what? I shouldn't talk about it because I don't know what the hell it's supposed
to do.
Well,
essentially,
it made me feel good.
Yeah, I mean, essentially, it's like we are energy. We are frequency, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Everything is.
Yeah.
Everything's vibrating at a certain vibration. And so the Earth's vibration is 432 megahertz. And that also is your heart's vibration.
Oh, cool.
So it coincides to that. So everything above your heart goes up in frequency, and everything below your heart goes down in frequency.
Okay.
So there's each of your, I guess, your energy centers and your body parts vibrate at a certain frequency. So for me, for my neck, it's the throat chakra. It's a throat, you know, it's right here. So I believe it was 529 megahertz that I was listening to the most.
Yep.
And also 432, because that's love, and that's kind of like the,
sweet.
That's everything, right?
Yeah.
And it was helping with the regeneration of DNA, with the regeneration of muscles, of the nervous system, to calm it down and to really get your body to do the miraculous thing that that our body does, which is heal.
Yeah.
We're designed to heal ourselves. Our limitation is often our thoughts.
Right.
Is always our thoughts.
You're reminding me that before asking Terry, I'm like, well, do you take painkillers if you get injured? He said, no, because then my body won't know where to send the healing to. If I don't feel pain, then my body won't know where to send the healing to. And I remember at the time I was eating a lot of Advil. Like I was just trying to keep inflammation down by eating lots of Advil, drinking a lot at night, and snowboarding a lot. So like using my muscles a lot. So I thought that was, you know, instantly I thought I better get off these painkillers because they're probably pretty toxic for my body. And I found what we're talking about down by the river here. I found that a cold water bath, just the temperature that comes out of the tap that's cold, and trying to get into that is insane. The first I did a full bath, and I went in, and it really sucks for your ball chakra or whatever that is. It sucks there. And then I figured out if you lie in the tub and you fill it up just the 3 or 4 inches of your back and you lie in there for 10 minutes, like it's 10 times what Advil does. The inflammation is gone. You feel rejuvenated. So cold water therapy is incredible. And I love what you're saying about knowledge of, like, if you have the attitude that you're going to heal, it makes all the difference. Like, you can despair yourself into dead, to dying.
I mean, yeah, the power of belief is very powerful. Like, if you're going positive healing, positive vibes, positive vibration, whatever you want to call it, you know, depending if you're on the street or in science, you have the same, different words for the same thing, right?
Sure.
Yeah, when you think, when you believe that you can heal, then you can heal. When you believe that you can bring in, like, you know, whatever, a relationship, then you can. When you believe you can bring in money, you can. It's it's all of it is, it's pretty interesting because often, like, I find myself, like, you know, I found myself over the years, like, being very positive on things, and then you're in the flow, and then things happen, and you don't necessarily realize that you're actually bringing it.
Right.
It just happens, and you're like, oh, it happens. And then, like,
yeah,
one thing's neat to the next. I found that I realized that even way more when I go the other way. If I go negative, and then you start your day negatively, and then something else happened, and then you're like, oh, you're angry, and then it it attracts more negative outcome and negative experiences, and then you're like, you're angry about it, and then it just comes back.
Yeah.
But what I learned is that you always have the choice to switch that. As humans, we can just switch from negative to positive very quickly.
Now that we're older, it's a little easier. When I was young, I could get so deep into the darkness.
Yeah.
Just and not know that I was causing it. Mm-hmm. You look around and you get, like you say, from the very first moment you step out of your house, or even while you're in your house.
Yeah.
You look, there's not the thing I wanted to eat for breakfast. Great. Okay. I guess I won't have that then. And you get out of the street. Oh, everybody's driving like assholes.
I know, right?
You get to your job. I hate this place. Why am I even here? Obviously my boss is going to say some shitty thing to me. Yeah, it just happens. But I mean, I think for me, and I heard your wife say it, it's like this acceptance thing for me that I really like. Stuff can be negative. Yeah. You know, you could be in a shitty situation.
Of course.
You could be in the snow with a fucking broken neck.
You're living life as in the human experience. Like, of course, life's going to happen.
Yeah.
You're going to get challenges. You're going to get things that's thrown at you.
Yeah, big experiences. That's what I've been calling them. Like, because an experience that leaves an impression on you, it could be a really big negative experience, or it could be a really big positive experience. But the measurement is the same. Your memory puts it into your mind and you remember that thing for a lesson, so you know better next time, or because that's what you're searching for, is more of that amazingness, that when you were in alignment with the universe and accepting of what was happening, you get these awesome things.
Yeah, acceptance is definitely a big thing.
I love it, yeah.
Yeah, and there's a couple universal law that I don't necessarily not just me, that, you know, we live for the law of gravity, you know? What goes up must come down, right?
Yeah.
That's normal. Like, we're standing here right there. We're not floating.
Yes.
And the law of attraction. So what goes around comes around. So, like,
absolutely,
the energy you put out, you receive.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's real. Like, in healing and in whatever, in life, it seems like the more positivity you put out, the more positive outcome is going to come your way, and then the other way around. But, you know, it's life, so.
How long between breaking your neck? This is at Eagle Pass Heli, which I want to pick your brain about Eagle Pass. It seems like it's the ultimate spot to go if you want to do a trip with your bros.
Oh, it's so amazing. Like, Eagle Pass in Revelstoke.
Yeah.
That whole operation, like, everybody there is just very knowledgeable and passionate and amazing.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, Scott Newsom is the one who started
legend.
That. Legend.
Legend,
right?
Of legends.
And
Brad.
He was one of the first with Craig, you know, snowboard backcountry guide. And so Scott, you know, the 10-year that they have around Revelstoke, the Eagle Pass 10-year is just amazing. Then they have the best pilots. And so you can fly. You don't need to fly in sunny weather always.
Right.
They fly in the craziest weather, and they find their way through the mountain and through these gaps where they just kind of like go from treetop to treetop, and then they find the opening, and whoop, here they're above the fog layer, and here you are riding like deep pow in steep trees in the storm.
Amazing.
And there's not a lot of places like that have the confidence and the knowledge of the terrain to bring their clients out there.
Yeah.
Right? So
yeah, a lot of operations, like, they're very expensive because it's expensive to fly heli, but the experience at the lodge, you kind of, if you go enough, you realize, well, part of it is the food, right? Part of it is the lodging and the lodge and the looking at the mountain from the 20-person hot tub and the fire sauna and the whole thing, you know. But then you get out on the terrain and they can only go to like a rich person's level, right? And rich people don't typically get really super gnarly out. They want to do powder rates. They want to go on something intermediate. So like when I went with Al Clark to Great Northern Snowcats, which is just south of Eagle Pass,
yeah,
the tenure is so steep It is so technical and so fun.
Yeah.
I was just like blown away. Like there's nowhere for beginners there. You have to be good.
Yeah, for guys like us, like those, like the old Revelstoke area, like with like Eagle Pass Denier, like it's pretty much paradise because there's pillows, there's wide open slopes, but there's so many features and there's steep trees from top to bottom.
It's not coastal snowpack now. I guess it's lake effect because...
It's a little bit lake effect. Yeah. It's definitely like interior snowpack, so it's drier.
Yeah.
Usually snows a lot more.
I got to go up there, man.
Oh, it's
amazing. Need to go.
Yeah. I mean, you should go up there. They'll look it up.
There's a reason that Ingemar moved from his career to Revelstoke and did years.
At that point, yeah, Trout Lake. Because like Trout is on the right on the edge of the mountains those guys fly into.
Epic.
And all that stuff. I mean, it's actually Johan used to also go out with his kind of like his like, I don't know how to call them, not a yurt or like a prospector tent.
Oh, wow.
Right? So he will go out and he would camp out in the tenure with his prospector tent. And then he had even like these, like he made these split snowboard. So he customized that. He would just hike up, snowboard down, back to prospector tent, like him and Hal Clark.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I mean, they chose that area for a reason, right? Like it's deep.
It's
deep
epic.
And deep and awesome.
So amazing.
And those guys' response when I was with them flying, when we were, because we were filming when I got injured.
Yeah, I actually heard the story. Do you want to tell the story? It's pretty gnarly.
So we went there on a Yes Now photo shoot with a good crew. It was amazing. It was JF and his daughter Juliette. Martin Gallant was there. And then we had Dustin Craven. And then this younger rider from Quebec, Jeremy Langevin, is more of a freestyler, park jumper, and rail guy. We wanted to bring him in the backcountry for him to experience that. So we had this crew. We were with Phil Tifoe, and then Connor was a filmer. And so we were scheduled to fly 2 to 3 days. And so, and we rode Revelstoke Resort as well. But so the first 2 days, we just like were warming up. But we were just like getting a few images here and there, doing a lot of free runs too, just like just riding good powder, you know?
Yeah.
We have a partnership with Eagle Pass where we provide them a quiver of board and quiver
Sick.
Bindings. And so that was the exchange. We got to ride a couple of days. And then at the end of second day, we were like, the conditions were prime. Like it was, the avalanche condition was, there was no problem. You could pretty much go on anything.
Sick.
Right? And so I was with Dustin Craven. He just had one bald face event.
Yeah.
He didn't tell us. We didn't know, but we kind of was.
He didn't even tell you.
He didn't tell anyone. That was kind of like part of the contract, I think.
That's unbelievable.
And so,
if I was him, I would have been telling everybody.
Yeah, even his filmer didn't know.
Holy
right?
shit.
And so that was awesome. But he was on fire, on point, right?
Hell yeah.
So that was very fun. So at the end of the second day, we wanted to go. We had our eyes on a couple lines, or he did. And I wanted to go with him.
Yeah.
And so we decided to just do one ship to save on time and go do a strike mission in the morning when the east-facing slope were going to be lit. And so we did, and it was awesome. So we stepped up to a couple bigger lines and had such amazing time, and we were ready to go, actually. Dustin's like, I'm ready to go. We're good. Let's bag it. How much time do we have left? And we're like, oh, well, we could do one more, but like... So we were kind of debating, like, let's do a free ride run or let's leave. Or I was like, the filmers were already placed on this one, like facing this one slope. And so I'm eyeing it. I was like, do you want this, Dustin? It's like, I hit it last year for my movie. So
Sick.
You should hit it if you want.
Yeah.
And we're like, I don't know. Yeah. Okay. Is that okay? Like, I took the decision. I'm like, I want to do it. It's like, yeah, go. It's awesome, you know, conditions are good. So I got taken to the top of it. And I guess the mistake I made, it was that I didn't fly in front to have a little bit of a better look. I saw it from the side, which it looked very snowy and perfect.
Yep.
And so I walked down a little bit and kind of like tried to locate myself. And I felt pretty confident. I knew where I was. And so I hiked back up to the start of the run. And I was like, all right, ready to roll. Let's go. And I approached the line. I was confident. I was like, I know where I'm going. And then when I turned into the line, I realized right away I was not at the right spot. And at the same time, I was above all those spines. And between the spines, I could see the reflection of the sun. And it was icy. And I could see a lot of rock heads everywhere.
Oh, my God.
And I'm like, oh, shit. Again, I took the decision because I was being filmed to keep going. I could have just stopped right there.
Yeah, that's a spot you should stop.
And then I could have just traversed.
Yep.
And then, you know, whatever, no shots.
Yep.
I think by default, right? Like, I'm used to filming.
Programming.
Backcountry lines. I was after.
Do not stop.
I was after it. I
Turn
was like,
it.
I can adjust that.
Yeah.
So that quick 1 second decision, I'm going to make it. So I adjusted and went on my toe edge to cross the spine. And I was just going to go lay a big turn like in the open.
Yep.
I either clipped a rock or a patch of ice, and that just put me off edge, and I started tumbling. And I started tumbling and tumbling. And at some point, I'm like, oh, shit, it's real, you know? And I felt like I hit my elbow.
Yeah.
Because it was really painful on this elbow, and it shot right into my arm, to my fingers.
Yeah.
And so at that point, I was still tumbling, like out of control. I couldn't stop. Like, so I just basically was like, at that point, I'm like, okay, I protected my head because I didn't wear a helmet, but I had a backpack.
Yep.
And then get to the bottom, and I'm like, oh, that was crazy. And I'm like, I didn't hit my head. I'm alive, I'm good. And then they're calling me on the radio because Dustin and Sean West, the guide was, and the heli pilot was right across the ridge looking at this,
yeah,
like live,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And they're like, hey, man, you okay? You okay? You okay? You know, on the radio. And I was like, just kind of like scanning my body, like, okay, where am I going? What am I doing? I'm like, okay, moving my feet. I'm like, oh, shit, okay, I'm good. And I'm like, okay, I broke my elbow, guys. I'm going to ride down to LZ. Can you guys pick me up? We need to get out of here. And so I stood up. I rode to pick up my goggles that flew off. I rode to a flat spot because I, with the experience, I know that it's easier for and cheaper for a helicopter to land and be able to not be on a tow-in situation.
Absolutely.
So by the time I got there, I was a little wobbly and definitely like out of it. And like Sean and Dustin were already there. Helicopter landed. And then at some point, I was like, I think I broke my elbow. And Sean right away is like, he's a head guy at Eagle Pass. He's like, can you move your fingers? Yeah. Where do you feel the pain? I was like, I feel pain in my fingers, my elbow. He's like, okay, well, we're going to put a collar because we're going to get you to the hospital right away.
You probably broke your neck. He kind of knew.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
So right away, they had the trauma kit. They put that on. They helped me up. They lift me up. Dustin was holding me in the seat belt, holding me down. And they flew me straight to my truck. Then we drove to the hospital. Again, that was my choice. If they could have flew me straight to the hospital, they could have.
Yeah.
And so I got there, and then they're like, oh, I'm like, hey, guys. So I think I broke my elbow. We should probably do like x-rays. They're like, oh, yeah, we're doing x-rays. But let's do a couple tests. So they're like, can you close your finger? And I was like, can you move your wrist and resist this? I was like, nothing. The guy's like, we're going to do a cervical x-ray as well and all your back just to make sure. Guys come back, is like, good news. I'm like, yes. He's like, your elbow's not broken. I was like, oh, that's rad.
Yeah.
He's like, but we detected a chip at C6. I'm like, oh, shit. So we're going to take you by ambulance to Kamloops Hospital.
Oh, wow.
So from now on, don't move.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, okay. So then they had me on the stretcher. They took me in the hospital, in the ambulance to Kamloops. And then from that moment on, it was 90 hours until I got surgery.
Oh, wow.
And so I was, you know, told not to move. And I was also told, like, you can't really eat or drink water because you're going to go to surgery.
Yep. Yep.
And so,
oh, yeah, yeah.
That's when.
And we both know people that have moved during that time that it has been.
Yeah,
or
like, and you know, and it's like pandemic time, and I'm like, oh, in the emergency room for 48 hours, people being tested left and right for COVID.
Oh God,
hacking.
Oh,
you know,
no.
Like just a little sheet right between me and them.
Oh shit!
And then they kept telling me, like, they tested me 3 times throughout.
Yeah,
because like if you have COVID, we can't take you to surgery. And then in my mind, I was like, if I get COVID and I sneeze or cough,
I'll die.
I'm like, fuck.
God.
So then I was like, all right, that's when is like the full practice of like going deep into meditation and going deep into breathing came in handy. And it's something that I've learned that, you know, in Costa Rica, I took part of this training called Omani, and it was like mainly about that, about, you know, meditation, yoga, deep belly breathing, deep breathing, and calming your nervous system down. And so I just basically felt like everything happened for me, you know. And I felt like all this training that I had done that year was leading to that.
That had been just that year.
Yeah, I did a training in September of 2020, one in April of 2021.
Yeah.
And then practiced, you know, ever since. And then, you know, March 6th of 2022, I got hurt. And it truly felt like I've been practicing for it.
Right.
And I was just like, okay. So it was it was crazy because I got into such deep meditative state through breathing that I felt like I traveled to another dimension. Like it was just wild right before surgery.
Crazy.
I was like, I don't know.
Was it like a drug trip? Have you done psychedelics where you're out of body? And
it seemed like I released DMT from my lungs and I was felt like I was talking to my angels, really, like having a conversation.
Dude.
Like, am I gonna be good, right? You got my back? Yeah, all right. We're going to surgery now. I'm gonna be fine, right? Oh yeah, you'll be totally fine. Just do it. Like, it was just this weirdest thing. And then doctor kept I kept being bumped because, you know, trauma center in Kamloops is heavy. Like it covers all of Northern BC, logging accidents, car accidents, stabbing.
Yeah,
you know,
man.
That kind of stuff.
Everything.
Like overdoses, things like that. And also, you know, like I was on a list, but I couldn't really move. So I couldn't really go see the list or whatever.
Right.
And they had put me as like, I'm stable. So I was in the category where it wasn't like emergency.
Life
I was
threatened.
In emergency, right. But right. I wasn't bleeding to death. Right.
Got it.
And so like a lot of people that were, I was being bombed by was a mother giving birth and needed C-section, which, you know, obviously,
yeah,
that's more important. I could be there in meditation. I was fine. Right.
Right. Right.
I was breathing. I was alive. Right.
Yeah.
But a few times it was like being bombed. And then the doctors like kept coming, or the nurse, and it's like, how are you feeling? I'm like, I'm good. But I'm ready for the surgery. I could also use my own room. And then, so after like 72 hours, they moved me to my own room for the last day.
That's really nice, actually.
Oh,
hey?
That was so good. Because I could actually relax more to prepare.
Yeah.
And then it's like, it was getting late. And I was like, am I not going to get it tonight? Because they stop at a certain time, right?
Yep.
And then they come, like, okay, you're going to go in. I'm like, yes, all right. Last one of the day, you know? And I'm like, they wheel me into surgery room. And then all of a sudden I hear this. Bah, bah, bah. I was like, what is this? They're like, oh, there could be a C-section happening.
Oh, wow.
The anesthetist needs to go. And we'll be back. Just stay here. So now I'm like in operation room by myself. Everybody's gone. I'm staring at the ceiling. And I'm wondering. And then that's when I went into the deepest.
Sick.
The deepest, like. And then I knew. And then the guy come back. Is like, how are you feeling? I'm like, the question is, sir, how are you feeling?
Nice.
Do you want to operate on me? Do you feeling good? Because it's been a long day for you.
That's incredible.
I can't wait till tomorrow. He's like, incredible. No, I'm good. Let's go. So then I was like, okay, I trust you. Let's do this. And then that was my first surgery. So the guy rose up. He's like, all right, count to five. And then I woke up like, all right, that went well. I was like, what? That already happened? Right? That's trippy, man.
That's the trippiest for sure. Count backwards from 10. And you're kind of nervous because you're like, what happens if I make it to 10? Or like to 1, you go 10 and then you wake up.
It was intense.
Yeah, it's insane. You just go out instant.
Yeah, I mean, and then the nurse is like, so did you hear the chime? Like, ding-ding-ding-ding-ding. I was like, I heard something like that. What was that? It's like, that meant natural birth.
So nice.
When the natural birth happens, we ring chime.
The bell. That's amazing.
And so that's why you got surgery. I was like, amazing.
That's so cool.
So I was like, I was so grateful, like, for all that staff and everybody that took care of me. And then I woke up and my friend Paul Watt was there. He had came the day before to, you know, to help me out and just, be within my company. And it was very good. As soon as I woke up, I was in the recovery room. And then they're like, okay, just we're going to bring in a therapist to help you stand up and everything. And I'm like, I'm doing it right now. You know, I was like, I'm fixed, right? I was like, I'm fixed, right? I was like, yeah.
Like I can move now.
So, so I stood up and I was like, oh, yeah, I'll be fine. I knew right away when the first little bit. It's like, it's going to be a long time, but I'll be fine.
That's
and
incredible.
Paul is like, all right, so what do you think? Should we drive home? I was like, as soon as they release me, we're driving back to Squamish for sure. I'm not spending another minute in this hospital.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, so we did. And I spent 2 weeks here in Squamish at his house. He helped me with the changing of the collar. So what a hero. Like, he was such a good friend.
That must have been right around when I saw JF at the Banff event at Holy Bowly.
That was after.
Right? Like, So you got hurt in March?
March 6th.
And then that event happened April?
JF and Juliet had to come back.
May, yeah.
They had to come back that night.
Yeah, yeah.
And so so Phil and Martin also, they drove my truck back.
Yeah.
Phil had a newborn, so he had to come back.
Yeah, I just remember.
Which is totally fine. Like, there was nothing that those guys could have done.
I just remember... Because, you know, the industry we're in, you hear about, you know, Jeremy Jones broke both his legs. It's like, we saw you in a neck brace.
Yeah.
And it was like, okay, how bad is this?
Yeah.
Right? Like, that's it goes there right away. And so to see JF pretty close after that, for him to be like, it was gnarly.
Yeah.
But he seems to be okay. That's what everybody wants to hear. They're like, okay, is he okay? Is he going to be okay? Is he going to be able to snowboard? Yeah, that was a really close one. Yeah.
I guess I was, I had a C6, C7
Ooh.
Shattered
Eey.
With a 4-millimeter dislocation. So they say that, so the spine was dislocated and they said that when it comes to 5 or 6 millimeter, that's when it hits your spinal cord and that's when you can be paralyzed or dead.
So like... One more millimeter.
1 or 2 millimeter away from a tragedy. And so it wasn't my turn. So that's fine. You know, it's I got to learn a lot. I got to, I was.
I'm interested in that feeling that you have that it's like this was a continuation of a path you started yourself on, and this was like the final exam or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's what it felt like. Because I honestly, like, okay, so it worked out. It was like, we moved to Costa Rica for 1 year, and we wanted our kids to experience Spanish and outdoor school and that whole experience. And then be in dance and be in theater and do all that. And then 6 weeks in our trip, the world pretty much shut down into a fear factor pandemic thing. And it was scary at first. Like, whoa, what's going on? Like, do we go back? Like, they were like telling like all Canadian needs to go back, you know, like,
wow,
you need to, you know, go back to your country and whatever, you know? So we're like, no, we're here. We don't have anywhere to go. We rented our place in Canada. So, we're staying, we're committed. We're going to do school online and then we'll do it. So then that was rough for a lot of people, for everyone. It was not very easy for me as well and for our family to be confined in our, you know, all working remotely, which is fine, but we're in one room and both kids are in online schooling, and there was a lot of stress. And so, already the part of the reason why we wanted to go to Costa Rica, besides from wanting to experience the beach life, tropical surfing life, I had things to work through. You know, I was in a transition from pro snowboarding to, and then being an entrepreneur with, snowboards and dealing with a lot, you know, like, and so I enrolled into this program, which was completely transformational for me, very powerful, very eye-opening. And I felt I got out of there. It was like a 2-week preparation and a 7-day program. The 7-day program was like digital detox, noble silence, so you couldn't look or talk to anyone. There was a lot of practices like yoga, movement, blindfolded yoga,
wow,
deep breathing, shamanic breathing, mixed with a lot of different indigenous practices to connect with yourself, essentially. And then, so I feel like when I signed up for that 2 weeks prior to it was the beginning of the journey.
Got it.
And I'm still in it, right? I'm still in that journey.
Yeah.
Because when do you ever stop? Because we want to grow, we want to learn, we want to get better as person, as partners, as parents, as friends, right? But it felt like that was the beginning. And then I wouldn't say like that injury was a final exam, because I don't know. Final exam's pretty when I'll be dead.
Yes.
But
I can't believe we're laughing about when you're going to die. But yeah, no, I hear what you're saying.
But it certainly was part of it, and it's still part of it.
Yeah.
You know, and it was definitely like a big test, I'd say.
Sure.
Maybe not the final exam, but
midterm.
A huge exam.
Yeah, big midterm.
Huge
it's
exam. Like, how are you going to react to that? Are you going to apply the practices that you've been taught?
Right.
Right? Or like, it's like, there's this analogy that I like to make, and it's by living at the beach. It's, I compare it to surfing. So the swell is like an emotion.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You can't stop the swell from coming, but you can decide which wave to surf and how to surf it.
Wow.
Right? Just like your emotions.
Wow.
Life happens.
That's it.
Right? So it's like some days you feel like you're pulling into a closeout barrel.
Yeah.
And you just eat it.
Yeah.
And eat it.
Yeah.
You can't make it out to the outside, but eventually you are, right?
That's amazing.
With perseverance, right? And then some days it's just glide. It's bliss. It's everything is perfect.
Glassy
you're just gliding.
Wave.
It's glassy. It's set eye. It's offshore. It's perfect.
It's
right?
Too perfect.
And then you can decide to glide, or you can decide to hack it and slash it and cut back
do
all that. So like
up to you.
Always your choice. So,
I love this. I secretly hate it a little bit because I've been working on a book for like 2 years, and it just recently came to me. I don't know if I would put it the exact same analogy, but it's in the same book. We got a co-author, a book now. Basically, the same analogy, but with mountains. So when I'm on Mount Anger, The thing that I have a quote from Dano now, where he said, style is the act of making anything look like it was supposed to be done. You know what I mean? Like style, you can. So I instantly realized I can be angry with style. You know what I mean? And so when I think about riding Mount Anger, right? Like I've always ridden Mount Anger like my parents did. And they taught me kook style. Like we're not even in boots. You know what I mean? Like we're just tumbling down the hill like crazy. No offense to my parents, but they just had zero style at riding Mount Anger. So what it takes is the exact same perseverance and dedication and actual want to improve that it took to learn style in snowboarding. Now, some may argue I don't have the best style in snowboarding. I'm still working on that. That's fine. But like I'm sitting across from someone who's got hands down the best backcountry style, like the smoothness in the backcountry. If you had that same style with handling your emotions, like you say, you could talk about it on a wave, you talk about it in the snow, but I think that's the lesson that these sports teach us about life.
Absolutely.
Is that you get to choose how you do this. And if you, this is just me spitballing off the top of my head, but like part of going to Mount Hood in 1990 and looking up to the pro snowboarders that I saw there. Ray Till Lamb was one of the guys that taught me to put some forward lean on my high backs. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Change your stance angles a little bit. Get some more forward lean in there. Like that's how you learn style, is by looking up to people that have good style and then practicing and putting that. So you could do that with anything. Mm-hmm. If you're a person that freaks out in traffic or that, you know, God forbid you hit your kids or something nasty that you don't want to do anymore.
Yeah.
The first step is looking for people that do that kind of thing the way you want to do it. You got a broken back, look for the guy who broke his back and then healed it in the best style possible, where you go, that guy came out of that looking pretty damn good, actually.
No, exactly. And that's where the inspiration comes in. Mm-hmm. And that's also where we always have a choice, like no matter what,
100%.
Of how, you know, maybe not the choice of where we live or where we were born or who our parents are or the environment that we are around, but we do have a choice to feel, speak, and think however we want. And so that's very powerful, because every day we're able to, or every moment truly, it's like, oh, I didn't like that. I acted like an asshole.
Mm.
Right? Mm-hmm. Oh. But then the next moment, you can be like, you know what? I'm going to make a new contract with myself.
Yes.
I'm not going to act like that again.
Right.
And then you try.
Right.
You do it again.
Yeah.
And it's a practice, right? So it's like, it feels like Mount Anger or the swell, the way that you decide to ride it.
Mm-hmm.
Is your choice. And that's what's beautiful about it.
Yeah. It feels like we are living in a simulation, like kind of like a video game. And if you go down the rabbit hole with, you know, the top guys that are looking into it, we're eventually going to get to where virtual reality is the same as reality. So we're probably already there. But in the video game analogy of what you can do here in the game of being a human on Earth, you really only have, you don't even have a like left and right. Like you're kind of just, things are happening and you can either accept them or not. That's the only choice you have.
Yeah. Or you're going to react.
You're going to react.
Things,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. You can, and even your reaction, like as you were saying it, you can hate your own reaction, but then you can analyze it and be like, I like that. I hate that. That's good. Mm-hmm. I don't really want to love being angry.
Yeah.
Or selfish or greedy or whatever. And that lens, when I got that, it was maybe 2 years ago, it was from Sean Kearns.
Yeah.
Like a treatment that I did with him, which involved a heavy amount of drugs. Maybe I have to cut that out because you might not want anyone to know that that's one way of getting there. But it was an absolute change in the pattern of thinking that I had in my mind.
Yep.
And I all of a sudden was open to experiences in a different way, right? I've talked about it on the show. My son bumped into me when he's getting in the car, and I don't know where I got it from. I mean, I could speculate, but I instantly turned into like, oh, mio, like, oh, my head, you bumped my head. And then I had a second where I looked at what I was doing and I was like, I'm not hurt. Why am I acting like this? To make him feel bad? This is my kid. I don't want my kid to feel bad. Mm-hmm. Why am I doing this in my life? Mm-hmm. And in that moment, I was able to get out of my old habit and look at my son and say, you okay, man? And he was like, yeah, I'm okay. And I could see he was like embarrassed because he's a big kid and he was tall and it was like, mm-hmm. he was 16 or 17. You know, it's an awkward time. You're outgrowing the size of the car and, mm-hmm. you know, everywhere you go to move around the world, it's lanky. And I had a new perspective where I was like, I don't ever want to do that to him or anyone ever again. I can handle myself, even if I get hurt. Like kind of what you were doing. You're like, yeah, I think I broke my elbow. Meanwhile, you're in a life-threatening situation.
Yeah. Perception, right?
Perception and style. Like that's a different style.
Yeah, I like your analogy a lot. That really resonate for me.
Yeah, yours too.
Like doing it with style, you know, like, oh, you can get angry with style. I like that.
Well, you could see...
Or like go through life with style.
Somebody who's really angry in the lineup, let's say, and I'm not saying... That's very, you know, usually if you're a surfer, you're pretty chill. But there are a few that are really aggressive and that really feel an entitlement to a spot. I was here before all these people showed up and I'll kick you out. That guy dropping in on a wave angry, you could just see that he's missing the style a little bit.
Yeah, for sure.
He's just missing it a little. There's like a part of surfing style for me that I find the most amazing to watch. Is someone like a Jerry Lopez who you know is such a fucking dude in the real world and he's in a life-threatening situation and he just looks so fucking cool and grounded panicking as opposed to the guy who's like, my way, fuck you guys. Like, he's not going to get that perfect feeling because his style is aggression.
Yeah, and if we're talking about that energy, you know, like, whether it's surfing or if it's even just like somebody walking to a room.
Yes.
You know, you can feel that vibration that's
ordering
low
a coffee.
Or high.
Yeah, right? Ordering a coffee. The guy who's
it's
turning
like,
around.
Ooh. And so like, for example, like you're sitting in the lineup with two of your best friends and it's awesome. You're exchanging wave and you're laughing and it's great. And then this guy paddles out and then he gets all competitive and then... The whole energy of the whole session changes. Next thing you know, you're trying to like get back closer to the peak and then you're trying to like snake your friend and then you're like, just cause you know, you feel it. And so again, that's like part of the choice is like, what style are you going to have? Like, are you going to, you know, let that energy affect you or are you going to just like stay true to yourself and be like, you know what? That's his shit.
Yeah.
That's not my shit. Yeah. I was grounded and good and
we were having a great
having
time.
The bliss now. I can still have that.
Yeah.
But it's so easy
to sometimes you have to go to the beach, right? Sometimes you have to go, okay, this guy's here now. He really wants to get some waves. Let him get some waves. And then you're watching from the beach and the conflict with you is over, but now he's got a conflict with the next guy.
Yeah.
And it's magnet to your eye. You're trying to if you just let it go, you leave that situation because that guy doesn't have a style that you want to emulate.
Yeah. And then also it's like, you can't never always be positive.
No,
like it's
definitely
like
not.
We're human, right? Like
acceptance doesn't require that you're always positive.
Yeah.
But it does require that you accept that the way that you are when you're negative is the way you want to be with style, like not just out of control.
And it's like yin and yang.
Yeah, totally.
There's no positive without negative. There's no light without darkness. There's, you know, so there's that balance.
Yes.
It's just how you're going to surf that. How are you going to ride down with style?
You know, so. I mean, I started on this journey when I was quite young. Like I knew I wanted to think about life and do a life that was worth living, you know? And I came across the teachings of Buddha. That's what they had in the drawer at the hotel in Hawaii. And well, first of all, Hawaii in my experience is like one of the most magical places in the world.
So Aloha.
Exactly. Aloha. It's just It's so magical. Mm-hmm. And I took that Buddhist teaching book, you know, from the hotel. I was like, you can't steal a Bible. They're free, right? Like, and I read it front to cover to cover. And the thing that kind of bummed me out about it was that the teaching that I got from it at that time was a very, I just missed a point. I thought in order to end suffering, all you had to do was just make your experience so dull that you were never upset and you were never happy.
Right.
You were always in the middle.
Right.
So lose all your attachments. Don't have kids. Don't have a wife. Mm. Don't like things. You know, just sit and think. And I was like, there's no way I could do this. Mm-hmm. It's not going to happen for me. I have to like live on the other side. But I think Buddhist practitioners, that philosophers that really study it would look at surfing, snowboarding, skateboarding and be like, no, that's yoga. Like yoga just means being, right? I think, is that the...
I'm not exactly sure.
I'm pretty sure that yoga just means living.
Right.
So to surf is yoga.
And it's being in the
being
flow.
Present,
right?
In being
present.
Being present
in the moment.
The flow that you keep mentioning, that is the one gift that I want to give to my kids more than anything. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter what you're doing, but when you're in flow, you know.
Yeah.
Because you look at the thing, you go, dude, we just did an hour, right? Holy shit, we just did 3 hours. Like, this is where I experience flow a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. Snowboarding, how many times have you thought, okay, one more run, I got time for one more run, and then you look and you go, I'm an hour late. Like, how did that even happen?
Yeah, and also in that flow state, it's like, that's when the magic happens.
All magic right? is in that flow state, yeah.
Because it's that's when you're so connected with the moment that there's no attachment to the past and there's no anticipation of the future. You're there, right now, and all is perfect, right? And then things happen.
Yep.
So I think, like, I feel like, you know, from what you were saying about the Buddha, you know, I think there is a beauty in not going too extreme and highs and lows, if you can have that as a practice.
Mm-hmm.
And not, you know, it's hard for me too, because I'm kind of one of those guys who, like, I like to do it really hard, but then I hit low. When I go low, it's kind of like, so lately I've been practicing to just be more in the middle, more balanced as far as that. And that helps me for sure. But I don't know if I, just like you said, just be in the mundane state and not have anything going on. Like, it's, to me, that doesn't feel right.
I feel like the life journey is like akin to going to a haunted house, right? Like, it's like we came here to do this, to live. We came to Earth to live a life.
Yeah.
If you go to a haunted house, you go there to get scared, see some gross shit, be surprised. So all the kind of philosophical teachings are like somebody who's gone to the haunted house before and looked at it with the lights on and told you, okay, David, as soon as you go in on the left, there's a doorway, but it's not really a doorway. If you try and go in there, you're going to bump into a wall. And then the guy's going to come with a chainsaw, but it's not really got a chain on it. So, like, it's like explaining to you, but the whole point of the fucking haunted house is the fun of it, right? Like, so if somebody is teaching you to live on Earth by not living, like, hey, what you should do is just close yourself in a room, make sure you have no friends, have a little bit of water and some bread. I don't think they know what the deal is. I think that they are afraid of haunted houses and they...
But it works for them.
And that works for
everybody
them.
Right, has a different experience, right? So, like, we're creating our experiences. So,
yes.
I think for us snowboarders, we love to experience fun.
Oh my God!
There's
yes.
nothing wrong with that. we love fun. We live for fun, right? And and same for me. Like, I want to pass on that passion and that seeking of fun to my kids. And I think that's what I've done as much as I can. And I see in them. They're seeking it. They know where to find their happiness, you know.
Yeah.
And I think that there's going to be darker days, and then it's just, again, it's like how do you react to those? You know, how do you turn it around?
You're teaching little people how to react with style. That's the thing. Mm-hmm. If you have that as your mode, I mean, I'm just guessing now because I think I raised some pretty good kids, but I addressed my anger issues when I was quite young, right? But I mean, it's a journey. So there's all sorts of everything that I could.
Yeah.
There's so many things I could work on.
Yeah, but, and it's a practice. It's a daily practice. It's a moment per moment practice. And it's like, words are one thing, right? But actions. When you act how you want to act, and then that's what they'll see more.
Mm-hmm.
You can say, oh, I'll be better. I won't do that again. I won't yet again.
Right.
And you know, I do that. You know, of course, but when you actually act on it without having to say, hey, I want to do that, and just do it.
Yeah.
And then you repeatedly doing it, and then it's like, oh, that's when it's powerful for
I think that. That's how you opened the conversation, like that you were coming at it with the intention of gratitude. But once you started to live with gratitude, like daily gratitude, mm-hmm. you didn't feel the need to like put it out there to other people.
Right.
It was something that you were just doing. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I think that's really important for people to hear right now, because there's so much competition in the like virtual space, right? Like, how many friends do I have? How many people like this thing? Mm-hmm. Like, so many people in my life, and myself included, are stuck on this like scrolling life of, you know, one of the tricks I used at one point was Deepak Chopra. I was following him. Mm-hmm. And
I like him.
I love him. And so what I would do is whenever he would come up in my feed, I would stop scrolling. That would be it. I'm like, okay, I got two seconds today and I saw Deepak. It's over. It was awesome. It was cool. But the fucking algorithm figured it out because I don't ever see him in my feed anymore.
Wow.
So I got to put him back in there. This is a reminder to do that again, because it was pretty balanced there. I think in the future, we're going to be able to balance it out. I think you're going to be able to program your Deepak. You're going to be able to put it into your algorithm and say, look, I don't want to go over an hour a day on this scrolling shit. It's too costly to my mental health.
Yeah, it's such a rabbit hole. Like, it's one thing needs to next. I sit in my kids, you know, I have a 16-year-old and Snapchatting and Instagram and a lot of communication, but there's so much out there.
So much.
And it's so much distraction that at the end of the day, it's like you said, it's like next thing you know, it's like, whoa, it's been 2 hours or 1 hour. Like,
right. So is that flow? That's the thing. Is that a flow state? Maybe it is. It's a hacked up flow state.
It's a hacked, yeah. Yeah.
Because you're seeing advertising in there and you're seeing friends.
Is it the healthy one?
Yeah,
I mean, you're on the computer.
Right.
You're on your phone. And often a lot of those things, there's some good stuff, don't get me wrong.
Sure.
You learn a lot, you can learn, but a lot of it is distraction and a lot of it is lower vibration.
Mm.
You know, there's a lot of like you said, competitiveness, like, or like fear of missing out. I wish I was there. Look at this guy's got a better life than I. This, that. You know, so
true.
So it's a hard one, I think, to navigate. But yeah, we all do it.
One of the weird things about it is that it's creating this media environment that is so foreign to us, right? Like when we grew up with the magazines, you read the same magazine I read. Mm-hmm. I saw the same ads you saw. We saw the same movies every year.
Right.
We were a community based around this thing. Now my magazine media is like a little bit of babies falling down and some cat videos. And then like somebody gets sprayed in the face with some water, a couple of ads, then snowboarding, then a skateboard. Then, oh, somebody does some backflip on a motorbike. And then like it's a magazine for one person. If you went through my feed, you'd be like, this guy's crazy. And if I went through your feed, it'd probably be the same. I'd be like, wow, this guy is not who I thought he was. Look at this weird feed.
And I don't even really understand how that works.
Me neither.
Right? Like,
it's what gets your attention. Okay, that's the computer knows.
Like, Is it, are they listening to you?
How long did it stay on the thing? Did all you those, zoom in? Oh, did you watch really? It twice?
All of
oh,
that.
Of course.
All of that.
That's the data that they've been selling forever.
Right.
This guy likes margarine, not butter or whatever. They know this. So that sell your information to Safeway and say, put margarine on sale or whatever. Probably the listening thing. I've heard it debunked. I've heard it debunked really well. Right. Like, because our phones are in proximity and you're a contact in my phone.
Right.
So something that we don't even talk about, it's going to try and sell me that thing because maybe you talked about right. it when we weren't on mic or near
and
our phones.
I think there's that too, right?
Yeah. So then I end up looking at some obscure thing. You're like, oh, dude, did you see this thing I bought? And then I get an ad for it. And then I call you and go, shit, they're listening for sure.
Wow, that's so strange. Also, you know, like I'm in the space as like I'm working with both Yes and CB Days and social media.
Yeah.
And I think we're more than one person going through the feed and then.
Yes.
And so then there's like everybody's person or whatever yes. the people like. And then it's, and then you're like, what is this? And you look at it. And then I guess when you look at something, then it feeds you more of it.
Yeah. Totally.
Yeah. So
that's how it happens. And then it gets in your home feed because you're logged onto that computer and you have that feed. Yeah. It's weird.
Interesting.
Well, the main thing about it that's exciting is that eventually you're never going to see anything that you don't want to see, which is kind of cool. Right. Like, right. remember at the beginning, people be posting all their food all the time. You're like, fucking don't want to see your food, dude. You know? And now it's gone because those things got less likes. So people stopped posting their food. Or remember there was in between, you would apologize. Hey, this food's really good though. I really, really like this food.
How about like, you know, remember that song? Video kill the radio star.
Totally.
Now yeah. it's like, well, Instagram killed every star.
All of it, right? Yeah, all the stars are new. I remember resisting that at first, like saying to my kids, like, why are you watching these YouTuber guys play video games? This is stupid. Like, I could get 100 of my friends together and 100 of us are going to say, this is stupid. Like, you need to not do this. But it's the kids know what the kids know.
I know, they like it, and then people make a living off of
I've
that
I've watched
kind of
it
stuff.
Now. I get it. I understand what they like
and,
about it.
Yeah, my son likes that.
Yeah. Yeah, my kid loves
we
it.
We have to limit the time on the screen for sure.
Yeah, but didn't our parents have to limit the time too, right? Like, and we were watching garbage. Yeah, we were watching Cheers and
stupid, dumb things. It's like different era, I guess. Like, and it's everybody grew up the different way. When I was growing up, I had 30 minutes a day I could watch.
Yeah.
And I was usually watching Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
There you go.
So I can learn exactly. English.
And if you and if you go back and watch that, it's not very good humor. It's no. dumb.
Yeah, yeah, no, for sure.
Stereotyping and dumb.
Yeah.
But you learned English pretty good. So that's good. That's so funny.
That was the first exposure to English was Fresh Prince. And like after school, I think it was like 4 to 4:30. And then it was like, come back at dark.
Yeah. Get out there. Come back at dark.
Get out. It was like good. You know, I'm very grateful to not have grown up with the internet and with all of that. I see it and it seems like it must be much more difficult now to have so access to so much information and so much distraction.
Yes.
And also, you're not just at school kind of like either being bullied or like kind of like being in competition. You yeah. come back home and it's there. And it's still there. It's always there.
It's still there.
You wake
there.
Up in the morning and it's been there.
Yeah.
Right? And it's
yeah,
it's,
my kid told me one night I caught him and I'm like, dude, get off your phone. It's like 2 a.m. What are you doing? It's a school night. And he explained to me the next day that if he doesn't stay up with the late night people, by the time he wakes up, he's in a whole other friend group. It's like awkward and he's on the outside and he doesn't know the references.
That's so weird.
It's like 2 a.m. I'm like, I don't know what the fuck to do here, man. Like, you're a cool kid. You don't need these losers that are staying up till 2 a.m. He's like, well, you stay up till 2 a.m. Okay. I mean, you kind of got me, but like, I don't know what to do about it.
Yeah.
Like, I basically, at that point just kind of was like, yeah, I remember I threatened to take his phone away and he was like, he reacted in such a way, like it was like I was saying I was going to cut his legs off
right.
or something.
No, I'm in there.
Which scared me more. And because I was like, that's fucked up, dude. You need your phone live.
And nowadays it's kind of like, it has the new social, right? It's the, it's like, it's the new identity. Or
I couldn't do it. If you told me, leave your phone here for a day, I'd be like, you're out of your mind. No.
Yeah. So like, it's all of us, it's everyone. And it's, I guess the good thing to do is to try to create as much balance as you can.
Do it with style.
So then you can, you know, as you know, be in the nature as much as possible.
Oh, big time. Yeah.
And then do sports, do the stuff you love. And then if you are going to be on social media or YouTube, then do it, but not just that. Because then that's when things get a little bit like too much.
I don't know that I follow anyone in the snowboard world that's more on social media than I am. I mean, like what I think about, you know, like Mark McMorris is in New Zealand and he threw down a couple hammers the other day. Like he's not constantly on there trying to sell me something or it looks like he's obviously out there in the world doing things. Mm-hmm. Right. And I think that's what we need to look. That's who I need to look up to.
Yeah.
Like that. Yeah. Someone or like what you're saying.
Yeah.
Sure, it can be a part of your day, but if it's the main thing that you're doing and you're not getting out, you're not doing hikes, you're not going.
And to get back to vibrations, right? Like it's also like, it's just like any mass media, any TV, any of that is like, it's also like coming into you at a different frequency. You know, and that might seem like a weird thing, but it's like, I my sister's an artist. She plays music, and we were discussing that the other day, and she's telling me that when they master their music, it's at 440 megahertz.
Oh, cool!
So it's 440, but the Earth's frequency is 432, and it started as that, but Marley's at 432.
Oh, interesting.
So that's a weird one. It's like the same music, but it's emitting a different frequency. So therefore, I don't know. It's more connecting to love, you know. Like Bob Marley, like to me is a is a messiah, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Like he's like he's kind of like he's a god, you know. Like in some ways, like he's a prophet. You know,
there's
like
magic in the music,
you know,
undeniable magic, in
right?
Music.
Like in his music and his lyrics, and but also it also has to do with the frequency in which is playing his music.
Got it. Because
like we're getting that more. I don't know exactly how it works, and I don't want to just like, you know, speculate too much, but like in it changed in the propaganda, like during Second World War, where they adjusted to 440 frequency to, you know, and then all media followed. And then therefore now it's like, it's just an easier way to get your message across. It goes in your psyche and then
you're vibrating at a different
you're
level.
You're vibrating at different. It's like a little
so
bit
this
more
is getting into some
Nico
stuff too, right? Like he had some way out there ideas. We talked about some of that stuff on the show about, you know, free energy, Dr. Ebby and curing AIDS and cancer and things like that. And I think Nico's heart was in such the right place, but there's so much information out there and misinformation out there that you can get swept up in these movements to where you're, you know, all of a sudden you're saying, you know, the Jews run the media and all this stuff, which is going to get you fucking canceled.
Yeah.
Because there are some things that you need to definitely tone down if you're speaking to a large group of people.
Yeah. No,
and he was
sure.
speaking to a large group of people. Mm-hmm. And, disagreements don't happen in public anymore. That's a weird thing. They happen on social media. And there's this weird divide between people that shouldn't be there. Like I called him after. I was like, bro, what the fuck is going on? Mm-hmm. And he was like, yeah, I don't know what the fuck's going on, man. And he truly, truly didn't know that what was happening was going to lead to him essentially being completely deplatformed. Mm. I don't know where he is now. I haven't talked to him in so long.
Yeah, me neither. I don't know.
And snowboarding misses him. Like his snowboarding, like yours, I mean, he's in his own category.
Such good style. And I love to be in the mountain with him.
Line selection. Yeah, have you done trips with Nico that where you're watching him be Nico and you're like, this is insane.
So fortunate to have been in sharing that time in the mountain with him. Like, it's such a creative.
You started, while he was on Burton, right? Like, you weren't at Burton the same time as him.
Yeah, I was at Burton with him.
You guys overlapped there?
Yeah, for sure. I was,
I
did a lot of, like, we used to do, like, a New Zealand trip with Burton for a few years in a row.
We were teammates
in the alley and photo shoots. And
oh, my God. And you guys rode the same terrain by that point. Is that right? Was he in the backcountry at that point?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, because his trajectory is similar to yours.
Yeah, he was doing a contest. We competed pipe as well.
Oh, shit. Sorry,
Freddie Coppermatten and Nico, you know, they always were together.
Yeah.
And then me and my friend Daniel Mignot, we were always together from Quebec. And we were like, show up to Lux or to like all those European halfpipe comp. And then, you know, we would connect and then... I was lucky to be on the same, some of the same trips as those guys, you know, Terry and Nico, Freddie and, that crew, Gigi,
so
Roman.
Sick.
And,
oh my God.
You know, just very fortunate to have spent that time in the mountain with all those guys. They've really been a very huge inspiration for my snowboarding and
that. Because your style is in all those people that you just mentioned. Like, you're up in that category with those guys. Where you can win a contest, for sure. And your younger self, that was probably mostly the goal. But then once that translates into free riding, it's just that next level of enjoyable to watch. And, that's the cherry gig.
Yeah, I was actually, last night, I was reviewing... a bunch of old movies. And then this morning I received a phone call from Brad Kramer.
Sick.
And I was talking to him. He's on this, he was in New York City on this job. And we were just like talking on a couple different stories and just like, it was what a time, you know, and just to get back to like, now it's social media. You're on your own creator. You have to put up your own content and it's different because back when I was in the prime of the career was like, you know, the sponsor were doing that. You were not involved with what campaign, what photos they run of you or what video or whatever. You just show up, you ride, and then you just finish your day having a good time. That at no point were you like editing your photos and deciding what you're going to say about them and putting them out there and like watching, are people like that? Oh, I don't know. And like caring even, like, you know, like it was kind of one of those things where it was a different era. And I feel very fortunate to have been there. And now I think it's also very good, especially if you grew up in that. And then you can, you know, the people that are doing it well, not like entirely out of their ego and just like, you know, having good, you know, good messaging out there. I feel like, you know, like in the female side, like Jamie Anderson is somebody that I really like to watch because she rips. And I like her approach to life too.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I think there's the opportunity for people to be themselves and to progress and all that and be their own media.
There was a lot of mystery in our era, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's what's been fun about the show. You know, calling Jim Rippey and saying, you seem like a loner, man. Like, that's what came across in the magazines and him being like, yeah, I rode by myself a lot of the time. You go, oh, that's neat. But like, now we would know. We know the personal lives of the people. Mm-hmm. We know where they go in the summer, you know, it's weird. It's weird to have that kind of, you know, like I know about your sister being a musician, like because of social media, right? Yeah. Like I didn't know. I don't know if Steve Graham's got a sister. I don't know if Damian Sanders. Well, I know Chris is his brother. Actually, I know a lot about Damian's family now because I've done this. But, you know, at the time, it was just a mystery. It was a photo. It was like a photo could be an entire career. Mm-hmm. We're talking about George Pappas and that board. Like Russell Winfield on that Mistral. Mm-hmm. That was that board. You know what I mean? That's who Russell was to me, was this guy. Mm-hmm. He's riding a half pipe in the middle of the night.
Right.
Like, I don't know anything about him. Where he's from, nothing.
Yeah,
It was a completely different era. Mm-hmm. And now we got this. We can hear 3 hours of you on the bomb hole.
Because you watch, like, Ingmar Bachman's Backside Air, which is Tim Timeless.
Yeah.
You know just by watching that he's a charger.
A charger.
With style.
Yeah.
Right?
He taps the rock. I forgot he tapped the rock on the in run. He's like, so casual coming up.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, like it's so sick.
Yeah. He gave me a couple alternate angles to post for the repost of his episode.
Oh, really?
And they're good by today's standards.
Oh, for sure they are still.
It's so sick, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was a crazy time in snowboarding. I think it went to where the kids of this era have obviously progressed in their own way. But there was an era where things were so big and there was so much consequence going on that it got impossible. Like, impossible.
With the terrain that we were on, like the way park jumps were built and...
Yes.
And all that.
Like Chad Otterstrom talking about hitting a 100-foot park jump in the morning by himself. No film or nothing. That's not happening now.
Yeah, and like a cheese wedge that's like 25 feet tall, and then if you deck it, you're dead.
Yes. There was one of those at Grouse. I remember that was when I always thought I could hang with the big dogs, and then they built that showdown over the city or whatever the hell it was, some big thing. The jump was as high as your house. And I went, there's no landing there, though.
And like, then JF and Gaeta and those guys started to build those in the backcountry.
Yep. It's
like
nuts.
Huge house jumps, Rainbow Mountain. And it was like so much work. And we did that for some times. I really liked it when we started to just hit natural stuff. It was a lot more riding.
Yeah.
A lot less building.
Sean Farmer said that he's probably only hit a kicker like 10 times. One of them being the Baker Road gap that he built. Yeah. He's like, he was against kickers, but he recognized that the geometry of the road gap, because he did it first. I think a skier guy hit it first, but a lot of people at Baker had said they had done it, but there was no real, like, the in run wasn't built or anything. Like, he had to cut trees, set up the in run, build the little kicker, which he was like, damn it. I wish I could do it with O'Kicker because he was anti-kicker.
And wasn't Jamie Lynn one of also like, I mean, his stuff's iconic.
Oh, his stuff's off that. Yeah, absolutely. Right. His road gap thing where he got on the cover on that Strin road gap early on.
Yeah.
With a front five.
Right.
When doing a front five on a park jump was like weird. Like not like... He did a cab five over it. That's what it was.
I was so stunning and sick. Like, yeah. Jamie's just like, he's just such an incredible human too.
That he's a really good example of what it looks like when someone takes style to every aspect of their life. He speaks with style. He's slow. He's thoughtful. He acts with style. I mean, I've seen him freak out one time, but I'm sure he was having a hard time. But, like, he is an inspiring style master.
Yeah, in life as well to me. I saw him recently, actually. He's got a little baby.
Yeah,
Thalo. He went with Deanie. That was fun.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. They stayed with us for a month at least, maybe a little bit more while we were in Costa Rica.
Oh, I saw some photos from that. Yeah. That's dope, man.
Yeah, they came and we got some good surf and good hang, and that was so fun.
How amazing is it that your life includes hanging out with Jamie Lynn?
I know. He's very good. Very good friend and good friend of Megan. And I feel very fortunate. Yeah, that was Costa Rica thing. I told everyone, come and see me, you know, and then only a few ended up coming. But
Yeah.
There was some jams, jam visits for sure.
Ah, that's so sick. Well, the thing, your last stint there was the tail end of COVID, right? Or is that that whole time? Like, so the injury happened in the tail end of COVID, like 2 years into COVID, right?
Yeah.
Were you in Costa Rica for any amount of the time before that?
We showed up there February 1st, 2020.
Oh, yeah. So you'd been there for a while.
Yeah. So then mid-March, that's when things started to shift.
Ugh. Yeah.
And then the beach were closed for 3 months.
Even the beaches?
Yeah, they had like yellow tape across the beach, guys with AK-47 patrolling. The lifeguard were in on the patrol. You would get fined $700 US if you weren't to get caught on the beach.
Like just on the beach, just being on the beach.
Yeah, or surfing or walking your dog, whatever.
Was there any rich guys down there being like, oh, today's too good, I'll give you $700, I'm just going to go catch a wave?
Honestly, like a few friends and I, we just had this little bit of a loophole. I mean, we figured like we're not going to get anybody sick being
right.
by ourselves in the ocean.
Right.
So, yeah, I had my board across the river and we would just like swim across the river at 4:30 a.m. before sunrise every morning and be back by 7:30 a.m. before the patrol start at 8.
Yeah.
Kind of,
you got to do
kind
it.
Kind of sneaky around, but like I moved to Costa Rica and I showed up and to surf, and I show up and 6 weeks later they're closing the beach. I didn't know how long that was going to last.
Right.
You
right.
know, I was like, I don't think so. I think I can find a way. And I didn't feel like I was being lame because truly I wasn't going to get anybody sick.
Right. No, man, you don't have to defend yourself.
You
I
know,
understand.
It was just like, or, you know, but it did feel like, you know, the early days of skateboarding when you had to run away
yeah,
from
man.
Cops.
I hiked up Mount Seymour because Crystal from Intuition Liners has a cabin up there. So that was a bit of a loophole. And so I split boarded up there a couple of times, saw some tracks and thought, okay, well, I'm not a terrible person for doing this. It snowed after they closed everything down and closed the road. Mm-hmm. But then after, when I was going up to the cabin the next time, Crystal was like, don't hike onto the mountain because they'll kick the cabin owners out. We won't be allowed to go up because they've seen some tracks coming right. from the cabins. And I was like, oh, God damn it. So I didn't go from the cabin.
Right.
I went up to the top. It was eerie because you know how it is at the resorts. Like there's always somebody there, a caretaker, road worker, maintenance person. There was no one.
Yeah.
Like imagine the Seymour parking lot with no one, and it's still winter and there's like knee deep snow everywhere. It was so weird. It felt so apocalyptic.
Yeah. Yeah. That was a pretty crazy time.
Yeah. Yeah. That was nuts.
I mean, like, you know, but you know, like I think a lot of people have learned, we all learned a lot. I certainly did mm-hmm. through this whole experience, and there's a lot of compassion going out to everyone that, you know, lost people and that really, you know, that was really affecting them. It kind of like for us it kind of strengthened our relationship to be like,
yeah, my wife and I too, we're you know, so lucky that we're compatible.
Yeah, so I mean that was it was a yin and yang, right? There mm-hmm. was some bad things, there was some good things. And hopefully now like everybody's stronger from all of it, not just our immunity, but like our
yeah. How are you gonna be for snowboarding now?
I mean, I'm gonna keep getting stronger and stronger, you know. I've got this fall ahead to keep practicing with yoga. I think it really helped me getting some treatments. You know, probably I need some massaging and feel really good right now. Like these days I've been skateboarding a lot and I just came back from surfing a little bit on Vancouver Island.
That would be a big one.
Yeah. That's the one thing I told the doctors, like, you know what, whatever you do, fix me so I can surf.
Right. Cause lying on the board with your back bent like that is really,
it's hard to begin with.
Yeah.
But I guess I'm lucky because where I diffuse my C6, C7.
Diffuse them, yeah.
So there's a titanium plate with four screws and a spacer between. They removed the disc and they put a metal disc. But it's at the base of the cervical spine, so it's right next to T1. And so it's almost like I got sixth vertebra now, you know, and it's still like I can get the same motion now that I've worked through it and rehabbed it and did the right thing.
That's incredible.
Now it's just a matter to maintain flexibility, maintain strength, and truthfully, a good diet and good rest.
Yeah.
I think that it becomes a new lifestyle now. Like if I eat too much sugar, I can feel it.
Wow.
You know, I feel the inflammation.
Yep. Yeah.
So, I mean, it's good because now I know that, because I, throughout the recovery, I was just like, you know, doing everything I could, like from teas to, supplements to, magnesium to turmeric to, you know, all the things.
Yep.
And, doing a lot of CBD as well. Because I don't like opioids either. Like, I can't do Advils or anything. So, just like I need to feel. But, like, what helped me with pain at first was like THC, CBD, and then turmeric.
Yep.
All that.
So, were you taking a lot? Like, the turmeric, you could take a lot of turmeric.
Yeah, I was taking a lot.
Yeah. Yeah.
In a powder form.
Yeah. And then what about the pot? Like, THC, like, for pain, for me, yeah. CBD works better than THC. THC, I get fucking just
blitzed.
No,
I didn't want to like smoke it because, because like then I cough and it was, you know.
Oh, yeah, they kill you.
But I did, you know, when I got out of the hospital, because first of all, they're like, what do you want? You know, we can give you some Oxy, we can give you some Percocet, we can give you some Valium from all this. I was like, no, I don't need anything. They're like, no, you're gonna want something. I'm like, okay, well, what's the least you can give me? Like the least gnarly. They're like, well, we could give you 2 Tylenol trees with codeine every 4 hours. And I was like, give me 1 every 6 hours.
Yeah.
And then I did that while at the hospital.
Yep.
And then as soon as I got out of the hospital, I had the surgery. Obviously, driving back from Kamloops, and I got here, and I was just like, so I took, that was the last one that I took. They gave me like 100 of them.
Yeah, man.
And I'm like, I took one, and I was just like, almost like checked myself back into the hospital. I was like, I'm not feeling good.
They make you feel, me personally, they make me feel really angry.
I can't do it. To me, like it's that doesn't work for me. Like it's a darker energy that's just like, it doesn't work. So like what I was like, okay, I'm not doing that. Like throw those away. And then, but I did do the gummies.
Yeah.
CBD THC gummies, like I don't know the ratio, but
the 1-to-1s or something, like where it's like,
and even like literally, like because I had to learn to like sleep on my back, and then at some point, middle of the night, I will wake up and be aching, and like so I will eat a gummy, go back to sleep, and you know throughout the first 2 weeks while I was here, that's really like CBD was really what helped me a lot.
Yeah, it seems to be really good for inflammation.
Yeah.
Sleep as well.
Mm-hmm. Then I was putting in my smoothies all that, you know, turmeric and even lion's mane and some other very cool supplement that my friend Gabe Langlois and Leah
sick
from Pemberton, they came in with this gift with like those super nice like supplement for smoothies. I was so grateful. And then took that back to Costa Rica and like, you know, so, you know, I just learned to like eat better, better, rest better.
Yeah.
Do the things I love, help others and then live in gratitude. And that kind of is, for me, is kind of been the recipe.
Yeah. When you were walking up to your house here from the river, I'd forgotten that you were badly hurt, right? Like for the listeners out there, like when I interviewed Jeremy Jones, you know, when he came to the door, he was like he is hobbling. So when you see Jeremy Jones drop a fucking sick clip on a rail in the rail garden, that dude hobbles away from that. Like, he's smooth as butter on the snow, but he's still like rehabbing every day for his injury.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. That was a harsh one for him.
Super harsh. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, sure he's better now. It was like a year ago, yeah, or maybe more that I saw him, but you were walking up like, not like someone who's got, you know, fused vertebrae.
Yeah. Well, I feel like, I mean, everybody goes through injuries and their own trauma and everything, and then their recoveries. And yeah, I mean, I feel very fortunate that it wasn't worse and I got given another chance at living and at doing this. And like, so I just, you know, kind of every day is another day, every moment's another moment. And
how's it feel to be back in Squamish?
It's great to be back in Squamish. It's such a gorgeous place to be, and
it's wonderful. Yeah,
it's just like I grew up, you know, I mean, the last 20 years living in the mountains here. So being back here now, it's after spending 33 months plus in the tropics at the beach, you know, it's like, now I'm like, whew, super excited to be in the mountains. We got the seasons passes to Whistler, and the whole family is fired up to go boarding. And so that would be good. And then just being here now, like, going mountain biking or just to the river, and it just being in proximity of nature. Like, BC has got so much beautiful nature and wildlife, and I feel very fortunate to live around here in Squamish. And we got a very cool skate park too, and it's
really
fun.
Nice.
My son and I and my daughter, and we love to go skateboarding, and I'm gonna go tonight, I think.
Ah, that's so sick.
Yeah,
I should have brought my board up. I was just thinking of getting the interview. I'm like, okay, got to get this one that I got on a plane tomorrow. Going to try and interview my parents.
I got a few skates if you really want to.
Yeah, yeah, sure. That'd be fun. Yeah. I don't want to make too many excuses. I also have slip-ons on. But yeah, no, I'll flow around at that park is epic.
Yeah.
That's so much fun. Mm-hmm. Thanks, DCP, man. You're a living legend. And I feel like I'm going to have you on the show more. I like your philosophy. I think people are going to really be stoked to hear, especially that message of positivity. Like I said, the 108 days caught my attention. You always seemed like a pretty gracious person. Like, you were never like a taker. You just seemed like you were always giving back to the community and trying to build up friendships and promote other people, which puts you in a perfect position at Yes to be like, you know, helping manage the team, I'd imagine. And
yeah, I've been helping with the team and that
product
for
design
some years,
all
and
all
like,
the,
yeah,
all
we
the
all
things.
Like Rama and JP and I all involved in product designs and,
yeah,
and
man,
all of it, you know. I've been very fortunate to have that position of being able to be team manager for the last 10 plus years and
sick,
helping out however I can to, you know, to for people's career or people's dream, you know.
It's a crazy time to start a snowboard company. And you guys did it. Like, Yes is what, 11 now?
No, it's now like 14, I think.
14?
Like 2008, like it's that the recession year.
Oh, yeah.
Where everything went down.
The craziest
and actually,
year.
Like, we were in, yeah, that was like, I think 2009, we're in the last year at Las Vegas trade show.
Yep.
That's when we first started selling the boards, but already we had boards in that, you know, in 2008.
Yeah.
In the fall and December.
You guys were shooting on boards generating content to be like, this is a real thing.
They were like end painted board at that point from the Nidecker factory.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was just the start. We're going into our 14th year.
That's insane. That's
amazing.
We got
a sales meeting in 2 weeks now, and you know, proposing this new collection. We're very stoked on. We got a very amazing guy, David Pitchy, working with us, and he's been amazing. And you know, Alex Warburton, that worked with us for some time, what a legend. And I've been so grateful that for everything he's done for the brand. And then he transitioned to to other things, and then
Doing that deodorant. Well, I forget what it's called.
Yeah, he did that some, but he's also working at some other agencies now.
Yeah.
And he's just killing it. And having David Pitchy step into the plate, it really helped us, because he comes in such professional, so much experience, and it's really helping the three of us owners, like, you know, to grow into business, and also to be able to live the life that we want to live and do the other things as well.
Man.
Like, it's pretty sweet.
What do you think about Forum coming back into the space?
Yeah, I saw that recently with the Magda interview, and Pat Moore did a post recently. And I was actually just discussing with my partners, like, well, is Forum going to be an ally to, you know,
right,
to go against like the big brands,
right,
not against, but like to compete.
I know what you're saying, totally.
Or is it now a new competition, because it's the same model, right? Like Jeremy Jones, Peter Lynde, and Dogger coming in, just kind of like we started. Yes, I think it's very cool. I really like that brand, you know, when they first. Now, my question is Devin going to go back on Forum, or is he going to stay on Wired, you know, like.
Right. Yeah, I haven't heard anything.
Right. So yeah, that's fresh.
Yeah, and I'm not like Dustin, who could keep a secret. If Devin was on Forum, I would be telling everybody.
He's not.
Yeah. I don't know. I haven't even spoken with him about it. It really happened pretty quickly for the industry. You know what I mean? Like MacDog came out with it. Jeremy Jones was on Airtime. He dropped it on Airtime, which was sick. I think they're going to be. Yeah, I have no idea, because the way Forum was run before was insane.
Yeah.
And for sure, they're not going to run it like that.
Well, who knows? I mean, they got great people behind it.
They got
OGs. So, I mean, Peter Lynde is pretty legendary, you know?
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. But they were saying, like MacDog was saying, and Jeremy came on to his episode of The Bomb Hole saying, this isn't going to be a throwback brand, you know?
Right.
Which that's going to be tough, because there's so much retro love for that.
I mean, that's the thing. It's like, why wouldn't it be?
Yeah, why would you not?
Like Dogger's sitting on like all that footage.
All the footage.
They could have the sickest movie.
Oh my God.
Right? Like,
it's true.
With new guys and stuff. But like,
I
think it's pretty cool. I think like it's going to be a small brand owned by writers.
Yep.
I love that. I support that. I think that's awesome.
Yeah.
It feels like skateboarding now, right?
Totally.
There's more brands that are owned by the community, and it's like...
I think that's important. I think I'm talking up my ass here, but I think the big money guys took a look at snowboarding and were like, this is too niche and too difficult. There's too much integrity in snowboarding. You couldn't just put together a brand and slap the logo on a bunch of crap boards. You need to support the community. You need to have team riders. You need to have product development. You need to have... you know, a piece of snowboarding in your heart and in each person's heart. That's why is keep going.
Yeah. And I think that also, like, it is a community, like you're saying, like, it's like, there's the guy at that owns the shop. There's the employees of the shop.
Right.
You know, those are all part of snowboarding community, that if it goes to a big chain, if all of it goes there, then those guys are not going to do good. So like, part of our model has always been to support those shops, you know?
Yeah.
And obviously, we do have an online store, which is important, because a lot
of
people
hard balance,
only,
isn't it?
You know, they only shop online. You cannot have one.
Right.
I just know that you know, we really want to keep supporting the retailers and the OGs and even the new stores. But like, I think that's where the heartbeat of snowboarding is it lives there. Like when we grew up, like, you went to the skateboard store to watch the movies.
Yeah.
You sit there all day long until you go skate, and then that's part of lifestyle, right?
Yeah, you want to see your boards leaning up against the lifty shack. You know what I mean? You want the lifties to be riding your boards, because that's where the community is still, you know, vibrant and alive.
Yeah, so, good stuff. You know, it's very lucky. Snowboarding is awesome.
Yeah.
Snowboarding is fucking rad.
Thanks, buddy. That's the sound clip. Right on, dude. Thanks for giving me your time. Thanks for bringing
your
A game, man. I know this is crazy. When did you record your bomb hole? Like, not that long ago. just when you guys drove back.
Yeah, like it was, I think the 23rd of...
Right, of, and it comes out tomorrow.
Of August.
Is that right? It's dropping tomorrow.
Yeah, I believe so.
That's so sick, dude.
Yeah, like a month later, something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, congrats on that, man. That's fun. I interviewed E-Stone at the Bomb Hole office. It was super fun. Like, I plugged my mics into their rig and everything.
Sick. Yeah, those guys are G.
Yeah.
Like, that's awesome.
What they're doing is really inspiring.
Yeah.
They got the whole back end there with, like, staff and shipping out merch and...
So and, for them, like, if that pandemic, you know, if they, something came out of that pandemic, like, those guys, they did right for sure.
Hell yeah. Yeah.
Could, and you're doing it right too, man.
You know what I'm having fun with?
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, homie. F and Rad shout-outs this week to DCP and his whole family. Special shout-out to listener Aaron from Cyprus. Took a couple laps with him after meeting on the chairlift, and he rips. Thanks to you and your buddies for listening to the show. Remember to tag 3 friends and Beneath Apparel in the Instagram post for this show or comment, I want new Beneath base layer on the F and Rad YouTube video of DCP's episode. I'll be drawing a new winner each week. Good luck, and be sure to come back next week for another episode of the F and Rad Snowboard Podcast, presented by Vans and brought to you by F and Rad Snowboarding.